think of House Bill 426 first, then House Bill 461, then House Bill 509. We have with us today Representative Davis for House Bill 426. If you could join us.
Thank you.
We are on teleconference.
We are on teleconference. Great.
I should note for the record we have in attendance Representative Donnelly, Representative Parnell, Representative Ivan, and Representative Pinkfly.
I appreciate this committee here in House Bill 426. Because of the way that AS 23.3237, the Workers' Compensation Act, is worded, only students placed in public or private nonprofit sites become employees of the state and are covered by workers' compensation benefits. Under this bill, AS 23-30237 would be modified by striking nonprofit. This change would allow the state workers' compensation law to cover all students who participate in the own the job training, not just those who are in the public or private nonprofit job sites. It is important to open the doors for the job training with companies that would train young people in aviation, maintenance, technology, auto mechanics, maintenance, welding, wall, and fire management, and auto and body shop. This is an important educational issue, and this section must be changed if you believe in giving our young people better choices in their career placements. You have the bill before you, and there are people that's on teleconference to speak to the concerns and why they want this bill. However, I do want to say that there's a physical note. Do you have that copy of the physical note?
Yes.
Okay. We've been working on that, and we have come up with a possible substitute, but first I'd like for us to take the testimony, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, and to hear what people online have to say about it just before we go into that.
Sir, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Davis, as I was reading the material, it occurred to me that the differentiation was the private sector has this already and the state government does not. Is that correct, or is that incorrect?
Would you repeat your question, please?
The private sector already has this classification, but that the government sector does not?
The nonprofit has it, but not for profit. So people that profit do not hire students or bring our students on because they're not covered for workman's comp and they do not want to pay for it.
Okay, so then does state government itself have it as well, being nonprofit, do you know?
I guess I don't follow you.
Well, there's
and
a
so maybe we do have some people from the school district.
So we cover,
we certainly cover schools, so the state government itself to cover our
cover school kids too. So this would be just for the private sector?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. We'll go first on the teleconference to Esther Cox. Esther, are you there in Anchorage? We're going to try to, I don't know if you can hear me, we're going to try to keep everyone's comments down to just a few minutes. So any comments you'd like to offer would be welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a few comments that I would like to make, and that is that we really feel that a change in the wording is imperative for the survival of on-the-job training opportunities for students. Training sites are in demand by programs such as automotive maintenance, welding, wildland fire, auto body, carpentry, aviation, and I could go on. Because of the way the Section 23.30.237 of the Workers' Compensation Act is worded, only students placed in private or private nonprofit sites become employees of the state and thus are covered by workers' comp. And these areas listed include an element of risk just by nature of the job being performed, and employers will not or are extremely hesitant at best to place students in these areas. It's impossible in this day and age for the public schools to maintain a forward edge in technology. For example, students' automotive maintenance learn the basics of the gasoline engines, repair skills, and so forth. But diagnostic computers are only found in the business world, and if students are prohibited LJT sites because there is no worker compensation coverage for them, students are not able to send finely trained personnel into the business world. The rewording would strike the word nonprofit from this section and allow the State Workers' Compensation Act to cover all the students who are on-the-job training, not just those enrolled in public or private nonprofit job sites. I also have some other folks here who are willing and eager to give you some insight into the need for the change in this wording and the ability to open up more job training sites. If that's okay with you, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce them and have them give you a few words.
That'd be fine.
First is Larry Gordon, who is a job coordinator and an on-the-job placement person in our building and works with students doing just exactly that, on-the-job training sites.
Mr. Chairman, private for-profit employers must be protected by workman's compensation for students they allow on their premises to train, not work. This discrimination, the distinction, is very important if this bill is to be considered for passage. We're talking about a training and learning, non-employment relationship. The students are learning or training. They are not employees, and they are not working. I've lost many excellent vocational learning opportunities for automotive maintenance technology students, aviation, and welding students because employers were very interested in training but were afraid of the liability problems associated with that. Some of the businesses included Kenworth, Alaska, Mark Air Express, Alaska Helicopter, Allied Construction Services. These are employers who wanted to help out but were afraid because of liability concerns. There have been many others, but those are the ones that are more recent. So I'm urging you to seriously consider passing this bill so that we can have excellent learning opportunities in the real world, basically the private force sector, those areas where the students can train and those employers that can actually hire the students after they finish their training. I don't want to belabor the point of training versus a job, but distinction really is important. We're talking about non-paid situations. We as a school and as work coordinators dictate to the employer the days and the hours the student will train or learn there. The students don't work on the weekends. They don't work at night. They don't work on days that school is not in session. So it is not really a labor issue. It is an educational issue, and that's really what we're trying to address here. The Department of Labor lists six criteria that, if met, classifies as a non-employment relationship, and we follow all six criteria. So basically, this is an extension of the classroom. It is a training facility out in the community. It is not a job. It really doesn't have anything to do with the Labor Department. The other point I really want to make is we're not trying to take away any power from the unions. We're not trying to stick a student in and take the place of a paid employee. That's not our intent. It's never been a problem before, and I don't foresee it being a problem in the future. So we're not trying to in any way affect union workers or any paid employee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gordon. Representative Donnelly had a quick question.
Yeah, the line 9 of the bill says it only applies when the individual is performing the work experience. Is that what you're referring to when you say if they come in on a weekend and worked, that wouldn't count as work experience, that'd count as ordinary work?
That's correct. A work experience is really a misnomer. What we're looking at is training or learning going on. They would only work during the week. The students are not allowed to work at night or the weekend. If their skill level moves up to the level where they're considered for employment, then of course they start getting paid and the employer would dictate the hours and the days a student would work. But to answer your question, a student would not work on the weekend through this OJT no training situation.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just add along with that the on-the-job training is a training plan that is put together with the coordinator and the employer, and the student attends the job in lieu of coming to school during class time. So that's when the working takes place.
Thank you. Ms. Cox, did you have anyone else to testify today?
Yes, I have Lauren Dvorak, who is the Director of Benefits for the Anchorage School District.
Great.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Lauren Dvorak, the Employee Benefits Manager for the School District, and I handle all the workers' compensation for the district. I'm also the President of the Workers' Compensation Committee of Alaska. The problem of workers' compensation coverage or non-coverage for students in these special on-the-job training programs has been a thorn in our side for a long time, and for education generally. Problem is that employers, while they would love to help out and teach these kids skills as part of their classwork, can't take the exposure to the workers' comp liability under the act as it's now written. Keep in mind that these students are not paid by the employer. If they were, then it would automatically be covered under the employer's workers' compensation, and there wouldn't be a problem. These students, being non-paid, are only working part-time, and they're there to learn, and it is our view that there is very little exposure to risk from the state standpoint in these programs, at least as far as our district is concerned, because the district itself is not going to place a student, an employer who has sloppy work habits or inadequate safety programs, or is not going to follow through with the program of supervision in the proper manner. If a student would then go in and work part-time and be paid by that employer on a weekend, as was suggested, then that employer would have to pay workers' compensation to cover that student as a paid employee. I have seen the fiscal note or notes that have been attached to this bill. I think they're vastly excessive for the risk as far as we see it from the Anchorage School District's viewpoint. There may be other considerations in other districts that are in outlying areas, but as far as we're concerned, the vast majority of this, it's not nearly as devastating and potential to the state as it's been made out in fiscal notes. And I would urge you to strongly consider passing this bill for the betterment of the educational opportunity for students. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else testify?
I have a couple more people, but one for sure I'd like you to listen to, Mr. Chairman, if we have a few more minutes. And her name is Mary Kay Gilbert, and she is a student from the Anchorage School District in Anchorage. She's a tourism student, and she's on-the-job training right now.
Oh, she can go ahead, please.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, my name is Mary Kay Gilbert, and I'm doing on-the-job training, and it's been a great opportunity for me, and I think that it's it's not, you know, I think that we should have this insurance so that people can do this without, a lot of people can't get the job because a lot of the places don't want to, you know, have them on OJT because
have been in office
involved with them is a safe, harmless type contract where the parents are covering the insurance in case they get injured. But it hasn't been a problem in that area. We've had good success, and it's been very beneficial. Over 60% of the students have been hired over a period of 10 years. It's a good opportunity. Where we've had the problem, sir, is in a welding shop or a sheet metal shop or a print shop or an automotive shop where the employer feels that there's a greater danger of the student being injured, and therefore they don't want to take the risk of the parents maybe not taking care of the insurance and suing them. So for that reason, we are limited in the number of opportunities that we have for the students in all of our more hazardous related areas. And I would like to point out that I don't feel that the risk is as great since our students must spend at least one semester and sometimes two semesters before they're placed on the job training. They must have the recommendation of the instructor. They go through all the training processes. And even the state of Alaska provides an exemption for these student learners to be on the job without pay. So, except that they're not covered by insurance. Well, that's our case 22, and we certainly appreciate you considering this so we can provide more opportunities for other students. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Any questions from any committee members? You should know we have here in attendance Representative Taylor, Representative Bruckman, Donley, Ivan, Parnell, and Finkelstein, as well as the sponsor, Representative Davis. Do we have anyone here in Juneau who would like to testify? We have on the list Dwayne Billy from the department to answer any questions on the bill. Anyone want to testify? Representative Taylor?
We're still on teleconference.
We are.
Do we have the bill before us at this time?
We do.
If there's nothing further, I'd move that the bill be moved from committee with individual recommendations.
If we could wait a minute, I think the sponsor, Lincoln, said she wanted to get to something else first.
I did want to point out something else to you. As you can see, there's a $250,000 fiscal note on the bill. I believe that it's probably a high estimate. But we came up with a plan, and while we have these people on teleconference, I wanted to find out if they would be interested to know if this substitute that we have, a possible committee substitute, that would cover the problem that's in Anchorage and for other places, and yet not have to do anything with the AS 23.30.230. I have copies of that, and I'd like to pass it out to you. And it's my understanding that Warren has agreed that this is probably a good way to take care of it. Since I am not sure which one would be the better one, I know that we want to save money if we can. And if we could do away with this, get down to a zero fiscal note, I would love to do that. The copies are being passed out to you now. And there's a couple of things that I think that Dwayne would want to speak to if we decided that we wanted to go that way. But I'd like to hear from the people on teleconference if they actually have agreed to the substitute.
Well, yeah, let's, before we go to that, let's give a chance to all the committee members to look at this and ask some questions. Representative Taylor, then Representative Brown.
Yeah, thank you. My concern here, Representative Davis, would be that I like your initial concept in that we bring students within the coverage of a workers' compensation program if, in fact, they are doing some form of employment or work-study program. This alternative that you're currently suggesting would merely remove them from any coverage, so they would have absolutely no coverage. And I know of situations where we have had students in Ketchikan that work at various places. One, in fact, was working at a kind of a hamburger stand place, assisting in cleaning up and doing some books and stuff. And she's back there working, and they went to move one of the hot fat fryers. Mm-hmm. And it flipped over. And in so doing, spilled hot fat down both of her legs, terribly burnt. Fortunately, they had covered her under workers' comp, so she was accepted. If your act were to be in place, she would not be covered. Your committee substitute, if we left it the way it is, she would be covered. And I think I'd feel more comfortable knowing. I don't consider that fiscal load to be a very high one, and like you, I think in fact, I think it's estimated at a higher amount than what it truly would probably come out to be.
I wanted to give DOE an opportunity to speak to it. I prefer to leave it the way it is, but I did want to give them an opportunity to share.
Representative Ruffin. We'll go to that next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. I wanted to state a conflict of interest in that my son is a student at the Kerr Center, although he's not part of a work-study program currently, but maybe in the near future. And also that I'm co-sponsoring the bill, so obviously I support it, I think, because of Representative Taylor's statements and the concern on the possible CS. That all students be covered. First blush, I'd like to see it stay the same. I was concerned with the fiscal note, too. It seems high to me in light of the copy of a letter from Industrial Indemnity Insurance Organization. It was written in 88, but at that point in time, they hadn't known of any students that would have, you know, needed to be covered or had an accident at that time. So I don't see many accidents occurring, although there's always that possibility. I'll turn it back to
you.
Representative Biden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make one comment. First, I carefully support the intent of this legislation and hope that it will be given favorable consideration. And this bill will assist some of the rural Alaska students to gain the on-the-job training experience. That's very much needed work experience program that may not be addressed or available in some of the small community schools. And this is needed, certainly supported. I do have concerns, too, with the committee substitute, because I'm aware of, in our school district, we have several students from each community participating in commercial fisheries program. They work with local commercial fishermen to learn their trade, and it's actually work-study program, and to see what it takes to go up there and earn a few dollars on behalf of them. So I don't know how this committee substitute affects some of my concerns here as it relates to commercial fishermen.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, at this point, I would suggest that we move the bill from committee as is, because it's going on to the Judiciary Committee, and the chairman is here and certainly aware of the concerns, and if, in fact, further development needs to be done as concerns the fiscal note and other matters, that would give some additional time with which to get some more input and have an opportunity to discuss it with these people. I just think it'd be preferable to us making that dramatic of a change today, which at this point I would not favor making that change.
I agree with you, Representative. Any other comments you want to offer?
No, I have no other comments, and I would appreciate if you would consider the original bill.
Okay. Great. Any other further discussion by the committee? Representative
Taylor? I already made the motion.
Yeah.
It's been moved with individual recognition. Move that the bill pass from committee with individual recommendation. Is there objection? Hear no objection. So done.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Davis. Next bill we're going now off to teleconference. So that ends the teleconference for today. Next bill we're going to is House Bill 461.
Are you off teleconference?
We're off teleconference.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee and those in the audience, thank you for the time to be here today. This is a bill that simply adds one sentence in the actually in the labor code, and it allows young people under the age of 14 to perform in movies or in commercials, things of that nature. And it came as a result of the experience on a Fairbanks filming where Rescue 911 ran into some difficulty in hiring a young person on the set. And it turned out that the Department of Labor didn't have language in the existing law to allow people under 14 to participate in movies. And so one of the constituents in our area has called this to my attention. And I called Mary King Elberry, the state film office. She said that her group had been active trying to get language from other states to see what they had to say about how they let their young people perform. And then I called the Department of Labor, and they too are doing much the same. We put together what we feel is probably the simplest, easiest, cleanest way to address the question, and that is to put it in Section 2310.335, number 3, right under newspaper delivery or sales, reference to employment as performer in the entertainment industry, and just leave it at that. We had this before the HES committee, and they felt that it should move forward, and I would appreciate your consideration of doing the same. Any better way to do it that you might suggest.
Any questions for Representative Parnell? Anyone else in attendance who wants to testify on this legislation?
Why do we exempt canneries?
I think that's historic, goes back years ago. We needed child labor to
some cannery owner.
Yeah.
Yeah. The legislature has But I'm just looking at that and going, what in the heck is that? Canneries and warehouse work casing cans under competent supervision. Why is that such a high level of preference that all the we've been sent to that? So I really support this bill. I'm just curious as heck about that.
Yeah, I wonder too.
Well, you find in most farm states, you know, they let them bring in harvest. And
could we have X-rated, I mean, some kind of notation? What kind of films are we talking about here?
May I respond to that?
Sure.
I'm glad she brought that up because two things I forgot to mention. There, in your packet is a quick note from R.B. Williams, who's here, and it says that the Department of Labor supports this legislation in order to correct the current circumstances faced by the entertainment industry. And in the language of the bill, it refers to Section 2310.360, where goes directly to Representative Bruckman's question. It says, regulations for minimum standards and work opportunities the department may from time to time after public notice and hearing adopt regulations and issue orders establishing minimum standards for safety, working conditions, kind and extent of work in various phases of the respective fields of employment, maximum hours per day and week, minimum rates of pay and other reasonable safety standards compatible with the welfare of all minors. And so with the drafting of those regulations, Representative Bruckman, I think that that will certainly be overseen. It won't be an oversight, it will be over, and they'll make sure that won't happen. I understand that we've talked about that. Yeah. And they have also agreed to allow people in the industry to give them recommendations and suggestions on draft regulations.
Representative Donnelly and Representative
I should take everybody's time, but I support this bill. The only thing is I'm surprised at a couple things, and it has nothing to do with this initiative. This is a good initiative here, and that's the canneries exemption, and then the fact that I remember working for my dad when I was like 11 and 12, and he paid me like $1 an hour to break rocks out of some of the yards and the houses he was working on, and gosh, it was actually legal, I guess. I mean, realize it. I wonder how many other kids work with their parents like that, you know, mow lawns and things like that. Yeah.
Shovel snow off roofs.
Representative
Taylor?
I was, part of the concern I had was on safety standards, and I know that in California they ran into a problem on this same section while filming a movie down there, a helicopter flew apart on them, and it it killed a famous actor. I can't remember his name.
Vic Morrow.
Yeah, Vic Morrow, along with a couple kids.
Yeah, that's right.
And these were real small kids that were killed in this.
The way the department's conscious of that, Mr. Chairman, may not prohibit it, but they're certainly taking
I just meant
that,
you know, but, yeah, and as far as the canneries thing, it's probably okay if we can just include forestry and mine work. They're small.
As long as it's underground.
And you can get them down into these shafts. And,
yeah. Can I volunteer?
Representative Brooklyn?
Oh, thank you. And also, what about lunch and rest breaks? I would think for a child of that age, they would have, you know, be darn sure that they receive the breaks they're entitled to. I realize that that's a problem sometimes with adults receiving adequate rest breaks during the working hours. Are there special provisions then for their children under 14, even in their canning business?
Mr. Chairman, I might defer to Harvey on that question.
Mr. Chairman, I think California has laws like that that put limits on what young children can work in the entertainment industry. That's why twins are so popular in the movie industry. A lot of the babies see in movies are actually twins, and they use
it. They can only work so many hours.
Yeah.
Oh.
Run the twin,
yeah.
Work that one.
Do we have as many twins in the world?
But I mean, this
this
seems to be a blanket exception where I think they've adopted a whole section of child labor laws that apply to children under 14 or whatever.
Yeah, but we haven't done that.
The twin factor, Betty, is determined by who watches Johnny Carson. Actually, more people.
I should have watched. Oh, I said.
Remember who takes fertility drugs?
That's when you get into triplets and quadruplets.
Yeah,
twins are good. Quadruplets should be worth a bundle.
Oh,
it'd work those little suckers around the block.
Oh, gosh. But can you make.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Arby Williams. I'm Special Assistant to the Commissioner, Department of Labor. This exemption would just provide the children the opportunity to work as entertainment, as performers in the entertainment industry. However, they would still be under the, still be protected by the child labor law, which does limit the hours they can work, the times they can work, the number of days they can work.
Is child labor law, though, for the children 14 and older that generally are permitted to work?
Well, there are different sections to the child labor law. Children 14 and under, and then children under 18, there are different provisions, you know, allowing additional benefits. However, children cannot work before a certain period of time during the day and after a certain period of time at night. There are specific provisions that these children will
be. But the 14-year-old would be placed, the under 14 would now be placed in the over 14 category.
You're saying they could work, they'd still be in the same, protected by the same.
Yes.
Right, but those laws are on the books with specific hours. Those laws are there for children that are over 14.
Well, children over a certain period and under.
And
I mean over a certain age and under, yes.
No, I know. But I would think they should even have more stringent laws because they are younger.
There are, but the laws that protect the older children also apply to the younger children, and then there are additional laws that apply to children at various other ages, 14 and under, 16 and under.
Okay, I guess I was under the assumption that you didn't work till you were 14, other than babysitting and delivering the newspaper and now can. So, thank you.
Where's the World of Child Labor Laws?
It's in 2310. 335.
Any other questions for this one? Thank you. I appreciate being here. Any other questions anyone has for the go through this for the committee a little bit.
Sure.
This is employment of children under 18. It says they're not allowed to work more than 6 days a week at hazardous excavation or underground in mines. In an occupation dangerous to life or limb or injurious to the health of the miner. And if the Commissioner of Labor determines the duties not to unduly endanger the miner, if employment meets the conditions of wages and hours prevailing for the majority of the employees in the industry, the Commissioner may grant an exemption in writing from A of the section, which is those three things. So those are the general conditions, no more than 6 days a week. I guess that means they could work quite a few hours a day. No more than 6 days a week.
Mr. Chairman, my recollection is that I may be wrong. I think there's a limitation on the hours of 6, and there's a time frame between 5 a.m. and 10 p.m. Maybe another 14, maybe 9 p.m.
It might be adopted in regulation.
That should be where it is.
Yeah.
Is it?
2310 and 340 would address the hours worked during the day.
Should that be questioned?
Oh, it's listed here for California.
Yes, it is. The material of California was listed. And they can adopt those.
Okay, here it is. 340 says minor under 16. May not be employed for more than a combined total of 9 hours school attendance and employment in one day. If employed, miners' work may be performed only between 5 a.m. and 9 p.m. Employment outside school hours may not exceed 23 hours in 1 week. Domestic work and babysitting excepted. So there are some semi-protections.
Any other questions anyone has on
Let's go.
What's the wishes of the committee on this legislation? Representative,
yeah, I move the bill with the individual act.
Okay, is there further discussion? Is there objection to the motion of the individual recommendation?
I just say that for the record, I might move to strike out the cannery section on the floor. I mean, unless so the cannery people should be forewarned, or maybe they should come talk to me.
It's on the record. Without dissent, it's so done.
Thank you.
Well, now we'll go to our final bill of the day, which is House Bill 509. We have Representative Groomberg with us. If you join us. Adopt the Uniform Custodial Trust Act. We're not on teleconference today. So.
Yeah, I'd like Mark Hamlin to do
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're offering today a uniform act, the Uniform Custodial Trust Act. And I hope that you have a copy of the Uniform Act annotated in your file if you want to. This is an act that completes and builds on the Uniform Transfers to Minors Act, which we passed a couple of years ago. And that updated, as you may recall, the Uniform Gift to Minors Act, and it's also congruent with the Uniform Probate Code. It allows the creation of simple trusts for adults. And this is an aspect of estate planning, and it's an aspect of planning for a person when they become incapacitated. You can put your property into a trust, and it can be for yourself and your spouse, and if the trust provides, then the survivor will get it. It's an aspect of estate planning in that respect. It also allows the trust to continue in the event that you're incapacitated, so that if you think that, particularly for older people or people who are fairly not sophisticated legally, it provides a simple form for this trust, and it saves a lot of legal fees. It's an act that was drafted by the Uniform Commissioners in 1987 and will already be the seventh state to have adopted it. So it's gaining widespread enactment. And the notes show that there are very few deviations from the text by the states that have adopted it. So it seems to be working pretty well. We are in the process of circulating this to the members of the estate planning section of the bar, and we're in the process of getting their feedback back, but there doesn't seem to be objections so far. The Act is almost without exception the Uniform Act, except we've made three minor changes, and one of them I wanted to make I think was unwise, and I'd like to change it back to the original version. And if you'd look at page 3, line 27, this provides that when somebody transfers money on behalf of an incapacitated person who doesn't have a conservator, that they may make a transfer to an adult member of the family on behalf of the incapacitated individual, and the adult member of the family would act as a trustee. And it says, if the value of the property or the debt exceeds $10,000, the transfer is not effective unless authorized by the court. The Act itself says $20,000, and Virginia lowered it to $10,000, and I was thinking that we'd need the court for that extra $10,000, but I don't think so. The goal is to keep these people out of court, and I would appreciate it if an amendment were offered to take that back to the Uniform Act, $20,000, and that if you'd look, you'll see that language is in, let me see, the section of the Uniform Act is transferred to custodial trustees, section 5 of the Uniform Act. And if you'd look at the Uniform Act on page 13, you'll see that the figure is $20,000. And the only other two changes I made from the Uniform Act were in section 120C, which takes the Virginia version of that language, and section 170B, where we say transferor of the property rather than owner of the property, because the owner technically changes to the title becomes held by the trustee. And it's pretty simple, and this will go to judiciary where they can take a closer look if necessary, but I'm not aware of any opposition to this kind of a thing. And we're generally updating our probate code. You'll know that Fran Ulmer has a bill in to update this as well. And this seems to be one of the better uniform bills.
Any questions for the sponsor?
I would put that amendment then on the floor to change on page 3, line 27.
$10,000 to $20,000. Okay, it's been moved to amend the $10,000 to $20,000 on page 3, line 27. Is there objection? Okay, hearing none, so done. Does anyone want to testify this legislation? I think so.
Let's move it out in judiciary committee.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Do you have any more technical ones than this? Yeah, there's no. There are few. The bills, I have several bills in the committee, but they're all pretty technical. It's not going to catch your eye.
Certainly exceeds my attention span.
Well, you ought to see the insurance bill.
No, thank you. This is.
Well, what's the wishes of the committee?
This must be a year.
Glaze over.
I would move, Mr. Chairman, that we move it with individual.
Okay, this bill's been moved with individual recommendations. Is there objection? Hearing none, so done.
Thank you all very much.
I'm afraid we can't do this. We'll take up my realtor's bill today if you want.
You got to do it, please.
Yeah, insurance, we all got right.
I got notice on it. I'll pick a date and put it on.
I will do the same. That'll be the first.
six.
And that's a good idea. If you're dying, maybe, you know, right. Maybe it's a good idea.
Maybe it isn't. I don't know what it says.
I don't either.
Well, you're an attorney.
I guess it's kind of like an opportunity for people to protest rather than us saying it's a good idea.
Yeah.
There's two functions to these committee meetings, right?
Are we done, Coach?
Yep.
Good.
Boy, that was a good one.